and you're listening to 91.7 FM WHUS. I am Fran Storch, and for the next hour, you will be listening to Radio Naturopath. It's the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, and this is my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. If you can't listen to the whole show, we are recording it, so you can listen to it later on. And you can listen to our podcast at www.whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath. I'm on Twitter at Fran Storch ND, and you can find the podcast there as well. And Ron says you can find it all over the place also in a lot of different locations.
You can. There's lots of little podcasting places.
That it's on iTunes too.
Yep. It's also there.
So it's all over the place. It's very nice. So today's show is going to be sweet. One of the things we'd like you to do is to, you could also write into us. So you could write into radionaturopath@gmail.com, and I can answer any questions that way. But in the meantime, I want to tell you about sweet stuff, because one of the things that I'm hearing from my patients is, I crave sugar. I don't know what to do. I crave sugar. What should I do about that? And what I wanted to do is talk about different kinds of sweeteners, and are they good for you, and should you use them or not, and that sort of thing. All right? So give a listen. And like I said, there's going to be a lot of information, as per usual. And if you don't have time to listen to the whole show, just listen to it at another time, and you can get the whole scoop. Okay.
Scoop like ice cream scoop? Speaking of sugar?
Oh, yeah, ice cream. Well, that's something. Hold that thought, because the reason to hold that thought is because there are some other, that's something we should talk about too. And maybe we'll do that for another day, but there are different lower calorie ice creams. And before I can talk about them, I should probably review them and then tell you about what their deal is. But that's an interesting thing. Lower calorie ice cream and stuff they've done to it to make it lower calorie, but you can still have a frozen treat and, you know, get the mouth feel and feel like what's going on. So we might do, that would be a fun thing to do, a frozen confection piece. I wonder if it's appropriate for winter. What do you think? I don't know. All right. So let's talk about a few different things. Let's talk about the first one, the first big one that everybody talks about, that's in a lot of your foods, aspartame. It's known, it has a trade name of NutraSweet, but aspartame is widespread, is in widespread use in a lot of foods, and it's considered highly hazardous, which is an issue, because if you go to the checkout at the grocery store or at the pretty much anywhere, at the gas station, the convenience store, the hardware store, you're going to find, you know, candy and gum and lots of stuff at the checkouts. And who doesn't like to have fresh breath? The deal is, if you chew gum, you're probably going to get less cavities and you are going to have fresher breath, because gum, your average gum that's not sweetened with sugar, usually has aspartame and a sugar alcohol in it. Maybe sometimes it's xylitol, sometimes it's sorbitol. For more often, it's sorbitol. But often it has aspartame. So there's a lot of controversy about aspartame, because if you eat enough of it, it is highly hazardous. So there's a lot of controversy up to date. It can attack astrocytes. These astrocytes are glial cells, and they help to connect up the central nervous system. So astrocytes participate in the harmful effects of aspartame metabolites on neurons. So aspartame gets broken down into phenylalanine. Phenylalanine is an amino acid which you actually need in your body, but phenylalanine is a precursor to catecholamines, which are important neurotransmitters in your body that mostly rev you up. So phenylalanine is a precursor to dopamine and to epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are part of your fight or flight system. So it breaks down into phenylalanine and also into aspartic acid. And aspartic acid is necessary in the body, but too much of it is bad for you because it causes neurodegeneration. It causes cells to, it's harmful to cells. If it gets into cells, it destroys them. We used to do, I don't know if you want to know this, but we used to do lesions in rats. When I used to work for the pharmaceutical industry, we used to lesion their brains with aspartic acid and do different kinds of experiments. I probably shouldn't talk about that.
Ew.
But that's something that was done back in the day. Yeah, that's why I'm not doing that anymore. I'm doing other stuff. The other thing that aspartame breaks down into is methanol, which is a little concerning because methanol is really toxic. And it can, if you have enough methanol, it can make you go blind. That's why, you know, making homemade alcohol is illegal. It, like making spirits at home is illegal mostly because there's a concern that there's not quality control to find out if some of the alcohol that is produced in the fermentation and distillation process is methanol instead of just ethanol. When you drink alcohol, when you just drink wine and you drink beer and spirits, there's ethanol, ethyl alcohol in it. But if methanol is toxic, so that's one of the breakdown products of aspartame. So one of the things that can happen is excitotoxicity, and it can lead to, like I said, the degeneration of astrocytes and neurons. And the methanol metabolites can cause CNS depression, vision disorders, like I said, and a permanent and other symptoms. And if you have enough of it, these methanol can lead to metabolic acidosis and coma. The issue, and also aspartame can contribute to the formation of tumors in the CNS, like gliomas, medulloblastomas, and meningiomas. So these are tumors. Some of them are cancerous and some of them are not. But if you have a tumor in your central nervous system, they can press on stuff and make your central nervous system not work correctly. And they're bad. And then they have to come out. And that's a big problem. Glial cells are the main source of tumors, and they can be caused by inter alia, by the sweetener in the brain. The thing is, my understanding is that for that to happen, you have to really eat a lot of NutraSweet or aspartame. It's not like if you have one piece of gum every day, that's probably not going to happen to you. So there are other issues. There's a lot of experiments that have been done on it. There's not adequate scientific support for its safety. Recent studies of lifespan carcinogenicity bioassays on rats and mice, published in peer-reviewed journals in a prospective epidemiological study, provide consistent evidence that there is carcinogenic potential, which means that aspartame, if you eat enough of it, it could cause cancer. On the basis of the evidence of potential carcinogenic effects, we have to think about whether we should be using this as a public health measure. So it is. So the thing with NutraSweet is you have to eat a lot of it. The rise in plasma levels of phenylalanine and aspartic acid following administration of aspartame at doses of less than 50 milligrams to kilograms of body weight don't exceed those observed after what people eat. So what's accepted as safe is 40 and 50 milligrams per kilogram. So we did a funny thing. We understood that we heard that Donald Trump consumes, 16 cans of Diet Coke a day.
Something disgusting like that.
Yeah. So we did the calculation. We estimated his body weight and we converted it to kilograms, and we figured out how many milligrams per kilogram he was drinking. And even at that level of Diet Coke, he wasn't actually drinking enough to hit that 40 milligram per kilogram benchmark. So
it's because he's a large man.
Yeah, well, yeah, he kind of is. Yeah, so however, you have to wonder, aspartame does break down into phenylalanine and aspartic acid. Can it be causing some neurodegeneration? We don't know. Our beloved president, you know, say what you will about him, there's some evidence. Sometimes when you watch him, you wonder if he has some early stages of, let's just say cognitive disorders, because he does. There was that episode where he did slur his speech. If you look at him speaking now, if you watch a speech of his now versus even 4 years ago, his sentence structure is more disjointed. We don't know if that's because he's more anxious, because, my goodness, he's the president of the United States, or because there is some cognitive decline happening there. And he does drink a lot of Diet Coke. So anyway, enough about Donald Trump. What does this mean for you? If you have a big Diet Coke habit, suffice it to say, it's probably not that good for you. Because, you know, if you're, whether you're, whatever diet soda that you're drinking, if your diet soda contains a lot of aspartame, they're saying that 40 milligram per kilogram benchmark. So what does 40 milligrams per kilogram mean? Well, you have to know how many milligrams of aspartame there are in a can of your favorite diet beverage. And then you have to figure out how many kilograms you weigh. So, so your body weight, so I weigh about 145 or 145 pounds. And so I would take that 145 and divide it by 2.2 in order to get how many kilograms I weigh. So then you have to do a proportion to figure out how many milligrams per kilogram would 40 milligrams per kilogram be in my body. Because it's different for every body because it depends on how much you weigh. You have to do the, remember your proportions? You have to do a proportion. So 40 milligrams in 1 kilogram equals X over whatever my weight is in kilograms. And then you cross multiply and then you get your response, and it's, you have to do a little algebra there. Remember algebra?
No. Nor do I want to.
Okay.
Not
that bad.
Sorry, all you math people out there.
It's really not that bad. Anyway, so you would figure that out, and then you could figure out what according to the FDA, what a safe level of aspartame would be for you. And really, I'm a naturopath. I don't recommend aspartame. There are other things you can consume. The big problem is chewing gum, because there are studies that show that chewing gum does improve oral health. And when they do the studies, most people don't go to the health food store and get xylitol gum. And I'll tell you, I haven't found a purely natural gum that holds its flavor. One of the things they do with those gums that you buy, you know, with the gas station, the drugstore, and the supermarket, is, your ordinary brands, not only do they have NutraSweet in them, but they have flavoring agents. They have nice flavors, and then they have stuff in them to make the flavor last. They have different fats and different compounds in them that really do make the flavor last a long time. And I have a strange thing. When I chew gum, if I chew gum long enough, if there's no flavor left in it, I start to gag on it. I have to throw it out. And I don't know if other people have that experience. You're just chewing on something that you're not motivated to swallow, and you get excessive salivation. When you get excessive salivation, ultimately you can start to become nauseated. And that happens to me. So those gums that you get just anywhere, they taste good and their flavor lasts a long time. And the xylitol gums that I've tried, the flavor doesn't last. That's why when I want a xylitol candy, I just have a candy. I don't have gum because the gum, I take the gum and then I want to spit the gum out after 2 minutes. So, anyway, but the xylitol gum is going to be a lot safer. All right. So should you have a zero tolerance of aspartame? My opinion is that if you can have something else, it's probably a good idea, because why take the risk? I mean, there's all these studies that show it's got aspartic acid. The aspartic acid is a neurotoxin. And there's all of this evidence that it can increase your risk of all of these CNS tumors, the gliomas, the astrocytomas, the meningiomas, and you don't want to go there. So why risk it?
So in some cases, there's eye problems also. Eye pain, blurred vision, dry eyes, according to the FDA. They've found a connection between aspartame ingestion and eye problems, including decreased vision, according to several controlled studies.
Right.
And they say the biggest cause of concern is when food or drink containing aspartame has been stored for long periods of time,
right,
or exposed to heat, the breakdown of the components may become toxic to your eyes.
That's right, because then it breaks down into its components, phenylalanine, aspartic acid, and methanol. So you got a couple things going on. You got, so that increased phenylalanine, I don't know if it's because of increased phenylalanine, you're going to get more catecholamines. That may or may not be the mechanism. I think the most dangerous of the three compounds, phenylalanine, because we give phenylalanine sometimes as a supplement, because phenylalanine, it reduces pain. We'll mm-hmm. give it for pain management. And it also is a precursor to dopamine, which can make you feel good, and norepinephrine mm-hmm. and epinephrine. It can give you energy. So that's going to be the least problematic of the three. The aspartic acid Aspartic acid is a neurotoxin. It gets into cells and it causes cell destruction. We used it to do that in experiments. And then methanol, forget it. You're not supposed to be consuming methanol at all. And methanol right. directly causes those vision problems. So mm-hmm. you could be causing neurotoxicity in the optic nerve, or you know, in nerves related to the eyes. And you could be causing, and again, with the methanol, same thing. So my question is, why bother at all? If you have a diet soda habit, it's probably not a good thing.
No.
I would say if you have one once in a while, it's probably okay. But if you're drinking diet soda every day, it's probably not good for you. And the interesting thing is, you know, when I drink soda, I have usually, unless I'm very thirsty and very hot, I have 6 to 8 ounces at a time. And, you know, especially if there's sugar in it. But even if there's not sugar in it, I can't drink a whole big thing of soda. That's something that I find. And people really do have habits. I hear this over and over again. They have a habit of drinking like a case of diet soda a day. So, you know, 12.
A case?
Well, 12. Well, what did we say that Donald Trump drinks? Like 12 to 16 cans
right, but
a day.
That's 24 cans of soda.
I know. All right, so maybe more like 12 cans a day. That's, I guess, half a case. Whatever a case is,
ouch.
I don't know.
A 12-pack.
Okay, so 12.
We'll call it a 12-pack.
So 12 cans wow. of soda in a day. I don't always drink 12 cups of fluid in a day.
I don't even drink, you know, and I drink a lot of water, but I don't drink that much water.
Well, I guess there's an addictive component to the diet soda. That must be part of how it is, that you're addicted, because there's a little bit of caffeine in it, so it gives you a little bit of a rush. And maybe there's some excitotoxicity that's happening with the aspartic acid that's giving people a little bit of a rush, and they become addicted to it. Because, you know, most people don't drink 16 cups of coffee in a day. Some do. You know, people drink a couple of pots in a day, but most people don't do that. So I think it's easier to drink because it's sort of easier to drink than a cup of coffee, because a cup of coffee is a little bitter and you have to savor it. Although people do things to coffee to make it easy to throw back, like put a lot of cream in it and a lot of sugar in it, and then it makes it a lot easier to drink. But, I don't do
so
that.
So why are people drawn to fizzy drinks?
Oh, I can tell you that because I am. Are you?
No, I'm not at all.
But except you drink them sometimes.
I do sometimes.
Yes.
But it's not like I have to have it.
So this is interesting. This is something, I know this is something you've observed about me,
that
I like to drink drinks that are not water. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't like to drink water, I do. But and some people don't like the taste of water. I find that strange. I don't dislike water. I don't like water if it doesn't taste good. So if I'm at somewhere and the water that I'm drinking tastes like it has chlorine in it, I won't like that. If I taste the water and it tastes like it has mold in it, I won't like that either. So if there's something off about the water, I won't like it. But really good water I like. And we have a beautiful, 200-foot well at our house? And
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
We have a 200-foot well at our house, and we have relatively clean pipes because our water's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very good.
And I remember growing up in East Windsor, New Jersey, and everybody used to talk about how great the water was in East Windsor, New Jersey, because we had a lovely aquifer mm-hmm. under East Windsor, New Jersey, and that's where the water came from. And so depending on where you are, you can get really nice water. So a really good water from a good spring or a good well, I have no problem with that. So it's not about the taste of water. There are good studies that show that if people can taste carbohydrate in water, they're more inclined to drink it. So you know how you're like, why do you have to drink all these not water drinks?
Right.
Do you remember when we went to Florida to my mother's house?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see my sister drinking soda?
Oh, my God.
And my mother drinking sort of those diet fruit soda things?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's interesting, isn't it? So my mother and my sister, we didn't teach each other to do that. We're all like that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. There's something about us.
Within your composition.
Well, I think one of the things is, I know for me, and probably for my mother and my sister too, because she's our mother and we're her kids. In Chinese medicine, we talk about a damp constitution.
So okay.
which you do not have. I mean, in Chinese medicine, you don't have damp. You tend towards dryness in Chinese mm-hmm. medicine. In Ayurvedic medicine, you tend towards vata. You're very airy and you're very light, and you tend to be on the dry side, which is why you can throw back tons of water every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your preferred beverage is water, although you drink a lot of coffee too, mm-hmm. and that speaks to your kidney, probably your kidney yin or yang deficiency. Anyway, so...
And my ability to stay awake.
Well, there's that too, right? But in Chinese medicine, that's what it's called. But you have a different body type than we do, and we have more kapha going on in Ayurvedic medicine, and in Chinese medicine, we have more dampness. So when you have a damp constitution, it's like you feel permanently waterlogged. You're a little waterlogged all the time. So even though you need to drink, you have the symptom of you're thirsty, but you can't get it in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take this water. So I know it's in a Polar Spring bottle, but that's not what a Polar Seltzer bottle, but there's just water in here.
Okay.
So this is our water from our well. I'll mm-hmm. drink a couple of sips of this and it'll taste really good to me, and then I'll put it down and I won't be able to drink it. So why the heck, if I'm thirsty, does that happen? Well, your satiety for fluid when you're damp, it happens very quickly.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. And so you can't sit, and it's very hard to sit and chug beverages. As I said, there are studies that show that when there's carbohydrate in water, people are more likely to drink it. That's why you have sport drinks. And that's why, you know, even if we don't have caloric sport drinks, we put flavoring in it. Because, you know, if I've got that, you know, power pack, or if I've got that noon, or if I've got that, you know, flavoring in the water, I'm more likely to throw it back.
Hmm.
Now, mind you, for me, one of the things that helps me with my dampness is sweating. So if I'm very hot and sweaty, it's easier for me to drink a lot of water because I'm getting rid of some of that dampness.
Right.
But if I'm just sitting here talking to you and my mouth is dry, I'm less likely to want to drink. I can drink a couple of sips of that water and then I'm going to put it down. And it's because of the sensation of being waterlogged. My satiety signals because of my damp constitution. I don't excrete fluid as well, and I hold on to fluid in my body more than you do. And so does my mother and so does my sister. That's why we tend to drink flavored beverages, because we're more likely to get it in.
Okay, now, what about the fizzy part?
I'll address that too. So fizzy, interestingly, fizzy is a preference. Not everybody prefers fizzy. And some people crave fizzy. And this was interesting because when I was studying homeopathy when I was in school, we found that there were different constitutional types that craved fizzy. For example, the constitutional homeopathic phosphorus. So when you look at the constitutional makeup of that remedy, when you're looking at the archetype, one of the keynotes of phosphorus is they crave fizzy drinks. From being inside my body and explaining why, what I have to say to you is if my mouth feels hot and dry, my mouth can feel hot and dry even if it's 20 degrees outside. If my mouth feels hot and dry, I find the fizzy beverage more refreshing. There's something about it that I crave, and it feels like it's going to help to clean out my mouth. It just feels more refreshing. And it's something that draws me to it. So do you have some information over there that suggests why people like fizzy drinks?
Well, apparently it's a certain enzyme, carbonic anhydrase.
Carbonic anhydrase, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where is the carbonic anhydrase?
It sits on your cells and reacts with the acid to cause the carbonated water's familiar popping sensation.
Okay.
And it triggers the body's trigeminal nerve.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. And that would give carbonated water its unique sensation. But they say that climbers who take altitude sickness drugs that block that enzyme then drink champagne, which is kind of a weird thing. But it's I don't know. I'm still trying to figure this out because it doesn't make any sense here.
Why do people? It's not telling you why people crave it.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
Not, I have to get deeper into
but
this
I can
article.
Only I can only tell you from being a person who does in fact crave it, and there's probably a genetic component to it. You say you don't crave it, and yet you'll enjoy a San Pellegrino now and again.
Right. increase of carbon dioxide in a beverage can lead to a perceived increase in the coldness of the beverage.
That's true. Mm. That is true. And in fact, in Britain, when I used to travel to Britain, a lot of times they'll have carbonated beverages and they don't refrigerate them. Mm. So they tend to have the carbonated beverages. They tend to be a little less sweet, and they don't have like super sweet flavors like colas and stuff. They have more citrusy flavors because citrusy flavors are more refreshing if they're not cold. Because if you have that acidic taste combined with the fizzy, they're more refreshing. But I can tell you from being inside a body that prefers carbonated beverages, it's because of that damp constitution, it adds to your desire to drink the beverage. And in fact, if I have a beverage that I open, because, you know, like I said, I don't drink a whole. If I open a can of something, I have half of it one day and half of it the next. If I open it the second day and it's not as fizzy, I won't drink it. It's not as refreshing to me, and it tastes overly sweet. When I'm craving it, what I can tell you is my mouth feel, even though I may feel cold, my mouth feels hot and dry. And I want to get something in that's going to make it feel less like that. And when I drink the bubbly beverage, it makes it feel like it's cleaning out my mouth. That's the sensation I get. And there's got to be something genetic to it, because I see that my mother and my sister both drink soda also. And my sister will drink, you know, soda with sugar in it. She prefers ginger ale. And my mother gets those beverages, which is this. There's this class of beverages that do have some, they usually have some fruit juice and some sucralose in them. And I mean, that's another sweetener we should probably talk about. Mm-hmm. That would be the next thing. So it's an interesting thing. Sucralose. What about sucralose? Well, the interesting thing about sucralose is often sold as the brand Splenda, and it's another non-caloric sweetener. It doesn't have the poor profile that we just talked about with aspartame, because it doesn't convert into phenylalanine and methanol and aspartic acid. But there's some concern about it. What the interesting thing about sucralose is that it's basically sugar, and in a multi-step chemical process, three hydrogen oxygen groups in the sugar are replaced with chlorine. So because it's chlorine, you're not going to absorb it in the same way. So it's commonly used in cooking and baking. It's calorie-free. The product Splenda contains dextrose and maltodextrin, which are sugars. So there's a little more. When Splenda itself has no sucralose itself has no calories, but Splenda has some calories, only 3 calories per gram, because there's also dextrose and maltodextrin, probably to make it taste better. And it's negligible because sucralose is very, very, very sweet. Splenda doesn't have any kind of a bitter aftertaste. And there is some concern. It's supposedly it has no effects on blood sugar or insulin, but that depends on the person. And some people do get elevated blood sugar when they use sucralose. There's some issue that baking with it could be harmful. It's supposed to be heat resistant. But sometimes some studies have found that it's not heat resistant. You can get, when you heat it, there's a possibility of getting these compounds called chloropropanols, and they're carcinogenic. So it's not the most wonderful thing to bake with it.
Don't want that.
Right. And then gut health. There's some studies that suggest that sucralose they're going to reduce some of the good bacteria, like your bifidobacteria and lactobacilli in your digestive system. So that's not good. Mm-mm. In terms of losing weight, it's probably not going to have an effect either way on weight gain or loss. There are some people who say that when you use artificial sweeteners, because you're perceiving that you're eating something sweet, it does raise your insulin. That's been challenged. And what I see is that people who drink a lot of artificial beverages in the context of an otherwise healthy diet, it doesn't make them gain weight. So is it safe? It's a good question. My opinion is it appears to be safer than aspartame. However, it's not wonderful because there are questions about what it does to your blood sugar regulation. And there is a concern that if you bake with it, that it could break down into those chloropropanols. And so essentially it's not clear. It hasn't been on the market as long as aspartame. Aspartame are pretty, you know, aspartame, for goodness sakes, it's got aspartic acid in it. It's a problem. This could be less than a problem. There's also some concerns. There were some rat studies where there was effects on the liver too. You know, it's not my favorite thing. Do I recommend this? My opinion is if you can have something sweet, it's better to eat natural stuff. So sucralose, aspartame, if you ask me, if you can have something else, it's a good idea to have something else. All right. At some point, so one of the things, you know what we should do? We should do a piece on diet foods. So certain diet foods, we want to do diet soda. The other one we want to do is ice cream because there's all these ice cream alternatives now and, right. You know, these frozen desserts that are different.
Yeah, all like right. the nutty ones, like the almond ones. And
There's those.
The coconut ones.
But then there's also low-calorie ones, the ones that are lower calorie. So those are interesting. We want to talk about how those are. All right. So let's talk about other sweeteners. So one of the ones we want to talk about is one that's, you know, largely in a lot of sort of naturally oriented beverages. They're classified in the health food store now. I think they're classified as New Age beverages. It's really funny why they would call them New Age. It's pretty amusing. So when I look for New Age beverages, then you're going to see your beverages that are they're low-calorie alternatives, but they have natural sweeteners in them. So what are the natural sweeteners they have in them? Well, a lot of times they have stevia, and they have erythritol in them. So stevia is very interesting. It's this plant. It's actually a plant. And in the end, the lowdown on stevia is ultimately it's non-toxic and may even be good for you. Okay? So stevia is a plant. It's a very sweet leaf, which is why one of the brands you get is called Sweet Leaf. But it's... I don't know if you can still get this, but back when stevia was less popular, I used to buy dried stevia at the health food store, and I put it in my tea, and you'd need a leaf, one tiny little, I mean, we're talking a very tiny little leaf. I'd put one of those leaves in my tea, and that would be all I'd need. It made things very sweet. Right now, there's a brand of chocolate called Lily's that I get that's sweetened only with stevia, and it's pretty good. Chocolate and stevia do pretty well together. I mean, quite honestly, the chocolate with the sugar and tastes better than the Lily's, but the Lily's is not bad. So, you know, I keep Lily's in my desk and I'll have a few squares while I'm doing my charting, you know? So, anyway, stevia is this little plant, or it's also pronounced stevia because it originates in countries that's how they would pronounce it. So save it because it originates in Paraguay and Brazil. It is also grown a lot now in Japan and China. And stevia is 200 to 300 times sweeter than sugar. It's considered to be non-caloric. It's actually found to be helpful for people with diabetes, that it has some of the same properties as the drug metformin. So that means it's going to increase your insulin secretion and regulate your blood sugar and bring your blood sugar down. So it actually can help regulate blood sugar. And stevia is in the sunflower family. It's a, what do you call it? It's it's an Asteraceae. it used to be the Compositae family. Now it's the Asteraceae family. So when you see sunflowers, think of stevia. Stevia's in the same family a lot. And it's interesting because there are other plants in the sunflower family that are good for you. So like the sunflower has beautiful sunflower seeds, which are really good for you if you're not allergic to them. You know, they're a good source of essential fatty acids and, you know, monounsaturated fatty acids, and they have a lot of minerals in them, and they're a good snack. They make delicious nut butter, well, seed butter, rather. And then Jerusalem artichoke. That's really interesting to me because Jerusalem artichoke is also a sunflower, And the root is high in inulin, which helps to regulate blood sugar. It's an insoluble or soluble fiber that helps to regulate blood sugar. So it's interesting. So our friends, the Asteraceae, the sunflower family, can help you regulate blood sugar. How cool is that? So there are a bunch of constituents in stevia, like stevioside, and then there's the ribaudiosides, and there's numerous ribaudiosides, A, C, D, E, and F. And the ones you usually find in your food are stevioside and ribaudioside A. There's also stevial biocide and glucoside A. But usually they extract the stevioside and the ribaudiosides, and that's what you find in your food. And there are numerous brands that you can get, and the brands that you get, whether you get Truvia or you get other brands, Sweetleaf, usually if you get the Truvia or other brands like that, there's some other stuff in it, like the maltodextrin or dextrin. So there's a little caloric sweetener in there because depending on the stevia that you're using, there can be a bitter aftertaste. Sometimes there's not, but there can be. And so, like I said, there's many brands of it. Some studies show there's no effect on insulin and blood sugar or blood pressure or weight, which means it's not going to make you gain weight. And then there are some that show it actually improves your blood sugar, improves your blood sugar and glucagon response, and therefore can help with your weight. Also, stevia has a constituent in it called camphorol. And camphorol reduces your risk of pancreatic cancer. So if you have pancreatic cancer in your family, I'm talking to myself here, because Grandma, that's what made Grandma Minnie, that's what got Grandma Minnie. So I should be having some stevia regularly.
Hmm.
And I've been having that Lily's chocolate regularly. It has stevia in it. And also those drinks that I have that you complain about, they have stevia in them. So I'm having a little stevia most days, which is not a bad thing. It might lower your blood pressure, but it's inconclusive. They think it's helpful for children. You know, if you're going to give children beverages that are not water, it's helpful for them to lower calories in what they're drinking. And it's ultimately, if you turn around a few times, it pretty much seems to be non-toxic. The only problem is not everybody likes it. Not everybody likes the way it tastes. It's not sugar, so it doesn't taste exactly like sugar. And some people find that it has a bitter aftertaste. So not everybody's going to like it. All right. And so it's up to you if you want to use it. And if you're looking for a fizzy beverage or a non-fizzy beverage, you can look for stevia in those beverages. Stevia is usually paired with another non-caloric or low-calorie sweetener, I should say, erythritol. Erythritol is really popular right now. So a lot of times when you see these new age beverages, they're going to have erythritol paired with stevia. And so erythritol can be gotten from some fermented fruits, and it can be made from wheat or corn. So if you are gluten intolerant, and you want to drink one of these beverages, you have to be careful, because if it's derived from wheat, it could be a problem. And it might not be a problem at all, because it's just the sugar that's derived from it. And it's unlikely that there are, you know, gluten molecules in your wheat-derived erythritol. Erythritol, however, is generally derived from corn. And then there's the concern that erythritol could be derived from genetically modified corn. And most corn in the United States is genetically modified unless it's organic. Again, so I've had, so this is a big shout out to Bill Potvin over at Hosmer. So we've had this conversation about high fructose corn syrup, and his high fructose corn syrup, it's harmful because of the reasons it's harmful, because of the blood sugar regulation issues and what it does to your liver. But is it really a GMO problem? Because once you're at the level of high fructose corn syrup, there's no protein in it, so there's not going to be the proteins that are genetically modified. You're just dealing with the high fructose corn syrup. And I think he has a point. And likewise, even if the erythritol is derived from corn, if it's from fermented corn, does it really matter if it's GMO or not if all you have is the erythritol? Because the erythritol is just a sugar alcohol. There's no genetic material in it that's going to change what's going on with your genes. So whether it's GMO or not, in my opinion, is probably not an issue. However, what about the erythritol? So the interesting thing about erythritol, anything that ends in ol is an alcohol. So there's the whole question of sugar alcohol. Sugar alcohols are interesting. Sugar alcohols are poorly absorbed by your body generally, and so they tend to have less calories than sugar. And so they're going to help you with weight loss, and they're going to help you have a less caloric way to eat something sweet. So you've got your mannitol and your xylitol and your sorbitol and your lactitol. And all those atolls, don't say it. I know you're thinking it.
I am silent over here.
Good. Okay. So the problem is that a lot of those sugar alcohols are not well absorbed, which is what you want, because you don't want them to be absorbed, because then they would be caloric. But they are excreted through stool. And when they get into your digestive system, you know who loves to eat sugar besides you is your gut flora. So your gut flora is going to sit there and go, xylitol, lactitol. So they start munching out, and then they give you gas and bloating, and if you eat enough of them, maybe even diarrhea. Xylitol has a limit. We try to tell people to eat less than 40 grams of xylitol in a day. Some people can't do xylitol at all. They have even a little bit, and it gives them digestive upset. So that's something to be concerned about. Erythritol is actually absorbed. It's still pretty low calorie, but it's actually absorbed more than the other sugar alcohols, and it's excreted through urine, so it's less likely to give you gas. So that's interesting. And, you know, it is very low calorie, and so it might be a better choice than some of the other sugar alcohols. I love xylitol because xylitol is wonderfully antimicrobial. There's good studies on xylitol and tooth decay. It helps to protect against tooth decay. It helps to kill bacteria. You can use xylitol in gargles and nasal sprays, and it will help to keep you out of colds and flus. And if you have chronic sinusitis, it can help with that. If you have chronic allergies, it can help you with that, mostly because it's killing any bacteria and fungus that are living in your nose and just setting up shop and causing problems. And, you know, it helps to reduce the stickiness of that bacteria. And when in your mouth, of course, the bacteria in your mouth, especially the strep mutans that makes plaque on your teeth, the plaque is sticky. And one of the things that xylitol does is reduce stickiness. It pulls that biofilm off your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So it pulls the biofilm out of your nose, too. Doesn't that sound delightful?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's part of how it works.
I have a nose spray that you gave me that
has xylitol in it. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. So you can do xylitol in your nasal spray. And I took one home for myself. And you put a little of that nasal spray in your neti pot if you want to, along with the salt water. So if you combine, and that nasal spray has salt and xylitol in it. It's not just xylitol. There's salt in there, too.
It's very pleasant.
Yes. Mm. It's nice. And then it drips in the back of your throat. It tastes like sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like that.
Yeah.
Cute.
It's a good thing.
Nice. All right. So erythritol, if you want to try it, you could try it. Now, a lot of you are probably saying, I don't want to have a non-caloric sweetener. Give me something else. All right. So let's talk about a few interesting other sweeteners. Let's start with coconut sugar. So there's an interesting things about coconut sugar. Is it healthy or is it a big fat lie? I don't know. So coconut sugar is interesting. It's from the coconut palm tree. And it is lower in the glycemic index than regular sugar, than table sugar, your dextrose or sucrose. And it's also coconut palm sugar. They cut the flower of the coconut palm and they collect the sap, and then it's placed under heat until most of the water is evaporated, and that's it. So that's nice. So when you get coconut sugar, it looks kind of like evaporated cane juice. It doesn't have that nice crystalline structure that your organic sugar or even your white sugar has. It's not crystalline. It's a powder. It's like a coarse powder. So similar to evaporated cane juice. All they do is they take the sap and they evaporate like they do with the evaporated cane juice. They take out the cane juice, they evaporate the water, and now you have evaporated cane juice. And we'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, so is it more nutritious than regular sugar? The answer is probably. It retains a few of the nutrients because it's not refined. So it's going to have a little more stuff. It's going to have a little bit of iron, zinc, calcium, potassium, some short-chain fatty acids, polyphenols, and antioxidants, which isn't that's really good. It also contains inulin, which is the same starch that's in Jerusalem artichoke. Mm-hmm. And that slows glucose absorption, and it helps to explain why it has a lower glycemic index. So it doesn't have a lower glycemic index because, like fructose, too much fructose, unopposed fructose, it doesn't raise your insulin, but it goes right to your liver for processing. No, it's simply because it has a fiber in it, and fiber slows the absorption of sugar. It's actually a nice mechanism. And, you know, you can't sit there and think that, oh boy, coconut sugar, it's so nutritious, it's like taking a multivitamin. Don't go there. You still have to eat your veggies. Use a little coconut sugar to enjoy your other food. So if you're making an apple crisp, put coconut sugar in it, and it'll be better for you than if you put white sugar in it. So like we said, the glycemic response with coconut sugar versus a standard glucose solution, it's definitely, when you study it, it's definitely lower than coconut syrup or than glucose. So it's kind of interesting. And of course, glycemic, you have to be careful with it because you have to see how it works in your body. Everybody's different about how they metabolize sugar. It does still have a lot of fructose in it, and coconut sugar. It has a lot of sucrose in it, so it does still have some fructose in it. So it has about the same fructose as regular sugar. You shouldn't be eating a lot of sugar of any kind, but if you're going to eat a natural sugar, this isn't a bad way to go. It's not a miracle food. It's similar to table sugar, but I think it's slightly... It's a better option, I think, than regular table sugar because it does have some nutrition in it and it does have that inulin in it. So if you're going to use a sweetener anyway, this might be a nice way to go. I will alert you. Now, I don't mind it, but it does have a taste. It's not – so some sweeteners you use, like if you use light agave syrup, it has almost no taste. All you're finding is the sweet principle. Coconut sugar definitely has a personality. It's earthy tasting, and you might not like it in everything. So you have to experiment with what you might like it in. Some things that are really bold, you're not going to notice it. So if you use it in baking, you're not going to taste – some people might, but you're probably not going to taste it as much. My opinion is some of the earthier sweeteners like coconut sugar and evaporated cane juice and demerara sugar – when I put them in coffee is so bold, and the coffee that I like is so bold that the notes in the coffee overwhelm the sugar. And I quite like evaporated cane juice and coconut sugar in coffee. In tea, tea's flavors are too subtle, and I'm very picky, and all I want in my tea is honey. And it has to be really good honey, too. Can't be, you know, store-bought pasteurized honey. It has to be good honey. All right, so just be aware that it does have a taste. All right. Let's look at some other interesting sugars. So we've got muscovado, demerara, and turbinado. So that's interesting. What the heck are those things?
I don't know.
So demerara, I was introduced to demerara I didn't even know what it was. I had never seen it when I was out in Oregon. And then when I got to Newfoundland, the health food store sold it. So it is a type of cane sugar. It has a fairly large grain. Pale amber color, it has like a toffee-ish flavor and can be used in place of brown sugar. It's when I used to get it in Newfoundland, I don't know if that's true here, but in Newfoundland I would get it and it would be a little bit wet because it had molasses in it.
Right.
So demerara was popular there because, you know, they used to transport the rum there. So demerara was one of the things they got. Then there's sucanat, which was really a brand name for evaporated cane juice. It's truly unrefined sugar, has a higher proportion of molasses than other types of cane sugars. It has a kind of intense, it has an earthy taste. This says, what I'm reading here says it has a burnt taste. I don't agree with that. Some people might find the taste burnt, but I like evaporated cane juice. And it's definitely earthy. So it's not going to taste the same, once again, as your brown sugar, even your turbinado sugar, your white sugar. It has a taste. Not everybody's going to like it. So if, again, it's going to do well in, you know, bolder, earthier things, like I think it's just fine in brownies or in chocolate or in coffee, you might not care for it in your tea. Or in something you want a subtle flavor. So if you're making lemon bars, you're probably not going to want this. So, but it depends. Then there's muscovado. I don't even know what that is. There's another cane sugar. It's really moist and strong molasses flavor. So more than the demerara. And you can find it in different strengths. I have never even seen it in the store, but it sounds really interesting. I'm going to want to try it if I find it. Oh, my goodness. Then there's one called Jaggery, which is made from palm, coconut, or java plants and comes compressed into a patty cake or cone, and it's also earthy and sweet. And so that's interesting. I haven't seen it in the stores. Then there's piloncillo, which comes from Mexico, and they add piloncillo to salsa and soup and mole sauces, and it has a strong smoking. See, I really like these things. I love molasses. And then there's turbinado, which is less processed than brown sugar. It's made from the first pressing of sugar cane and retains some natural molasses, and it's light and caramelly. So of the brown sugars, it's going to be the closest to regular sugar. All these other ones, that your demerara, your sucanat, your muscovado, jaggery, and piloncillo, they're all going to have earthy notes that you may or may not want in certain recipes. But in terms of their health proportions, I think they're all going to be somewhat healthier than white sugar. White sugar is bleached and processed. You know, there's chemicals in it to bleach it.
Why would you bleach your sugar?
Because you want it to be white. I don't
Why?
Know. Right. Because it looks clean. I don't know. And also because you take all the other processes, they take out all the molasses. They take out all of the earthy notes, and you have nothing but this very, very mild, sweet flavor, if that's what you're looking for. But I don't need that. You know, for me personally, if I'm going to eat a sweetener that is actually a sweetener, I want some personality to it. So, you know, I don't bake with white sugar at all.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think we have any white sugar in the house.
We might not. Right.
Right.
We have a few things. We have some coconut sugar in the house. We have some demerara.
Mm-hmm.
We have your organic sugar that you use in your... And you might want to rethink that organic sugar.
Yeah.
And start using something a little... See, you should try some of the other sugars we have in our house and see if you like them. And then
okay.
Maybe
we're almost out, so
yeah.
It'd be a good time to make the switch.
And see if you're going to do... See if you would like evaporated cane juice or something. Because it's a little bit healthier than the organic sugar. That organic sugar is the first pressing. It still has some molasses in it because it's a little bit brown.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have as much as these other guys. And the molasses actually has some nutrition in it. All right.
I can try it.
Yeah, you could try it. Then let's talk about yacón. So this is really interesting. Yacón really does help to regulate blood sugars. It can help to lower your LDL cholesterol. It can help with weight, blood pressure, and improve the health of your liver, prevent certain types of cancer, boost digestive health, and strengthen your immune system. So it's really interesting. It's a root, and it's grown and cultivated for that root. And it grows mostly in South America and the central and northern Andes, so Colombia and Argentina. It's a vegetable. It's been grown for thousands of years. And syrups and powders are used as healthy replacements for sugar, as sweeteners in various foods. And you can also eat the root, like a potato or a jicama. And the majority of the density of the vegetables are fructooligosaccharides. And fructooligosaccharides are food for your probiotics and your digestive system. And so it wasn't known outside of where it's grown until recently. So you can get the syrup. You can buy syrup usually at health food stores. And they're mostly comprised of fructooligosaccharides and water. So a lot of the carbohydrate sugars can't be digested by the body. So they go kind of through you, and you have a low-calorie sugar going through you. And then there's vitamins and minerals in it. Because it regulates blood sugar. It helps with diabetes, blood pressure, cholesterol, and weight loss. The only issue is you have to like the way it tastes as a sweetener. It's not real sweet. Like I've tried to use it, and then if I want something actually sweet, I turn to other things, I find. But it certainly is worth a try. It's worth getting, and you can get it at your health food stores. And it has all these of the other sweeteners I've just talked to you about. It happens to be the most nutritious. So that's yacón, spelled Y-A-C-O-N. And it's a tuber that they extract the fructooligosaccharides, which, like I said, they act as prebiotics. They are helpful for the gut flora, your gut flora, and it helps all these other health benefits. So, very interesting. What about honey? So, I am a fan of the honey. And honey is a natural product. Of course, it's made from bees. And the glycemic index can range a lot, and it depends on how processed it is. So ideally, you want to get honey that has as little processing as possible. But honey that hasn't been heated at all is going to be like honey cream. It's going to still have the beeswax in it, and it's going to be hard at room temperature. That stuff is really good for you. But if you put it in your tea, you're going to see wax floating at the top of your tea.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's still, that's the best stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's even better than that is Manuka honey, which is grown from the Manuka. The bees gather their nectar from the Manuka plant, which is a bush that grows in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So that has amazing immune properties. But regular honey, if it's minimally processed, is pretty good for you. It has flavonoids in it. So it has antioxidant properties and it has some nutrition in it. It also has a natural antimicrobial effect. That's why we use honey when we're sick, because it can kill viruses and bacteria. It has glucose oxidase in it, which slowly releases hydrogen peroxide. So that's why, you can drink it when you drink it in tea. When you're sick, it can help to kill the microorganisms that are in the back of your throat. And they also use honey packs on burns. And you can put honey, if you have a cut, you can put honey on it. And it'll help to heal the cut because it'll kill the microorganisms. So one of the things that I want to caution you about is that if you consume any caloric sweetener, caloric sweeteners are going to cause weight gain. So the less of that you do, finding other ways to get your sweet on is a good idea. Of the ones that we talked about, the yacone is going to be helpful because it has a lot of health benefits. The stevia and the erythritol are non-caloric as long as you like them and they agree with you. Caloric sweeteners all are going to have some effect on your glycemic index. Now, there's a few sweeteners I didn't get to talk to today, so I think I'm going to talk about them next week or at another time.
Mm. And then we can talk about cane sugar versus beet sugar.
Yeah, right. We should talk about those.
That's a biggie.
Yeah.
Because there's problems with beet sugar.
Of course. Mm. Yes. All right. So that was great. So we talked about a lot of sweet stuff, and we can continue to the sweet stuff. And then so next week, it looks like we're probably going to have a guest. So we may be talking about sweet stuff and chocolate in 2 weeks because it'll be
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
So we have to talk about chocolate.
Yay.
It's our sort of anniversary.
It sort of?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. We celebrate it that way.
All righty then.
All right then. Good.
All right. So you've been listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, and this has been Radio Naturopath. You can always call us here during the show at 860-486-9487. You can email me at any time at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, our podcasts are at whus.org and at iTunes. And you can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. All right. So we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on 91.7 WHUS.